Happy feet are stomping out the beat, trying to convince children and their minders that penguins have food problems. It's a children's movie. I love the line, "Don't be afraid, I love you." Go and watch it sometime. It's a fun movie about a serious subject: food, the environment, and humans taking too much without allowing for natural restocking. It's about penguin reality. In a 2002 interview with Ron Suskind of the New York Times Magazine, one of President Bush's senior advisors dismissed Suskind's faith in facts. "We're an empire now," he said, "and when we act, we create our own reality." It's the marriage of postmodernism and capitalism. The penguins are toast. Many of the airheads that fill the glossy pages of magazines have little understanding of realities other than their own. These celebrities are unfortunately the role models for many in our consuming society. They live, as one writer recently put it, inside a bubble of their own creation, being driven by the notion that me always has to come first. This is the me reality of consumerism. "What do you mean penguins don't have enough to eat?" the airhead asked. "Someone should open a can of tuna for them." Professor Emeritus Lloyd Gehring was honored in the New Year list. A competent and controversial theologian, he came to national prominence in 1967 when the Presbyterian General Assembly charged him with doctrinal error and disturbing the peace of the church. The phrase "disturbing the peace of the church" is worth pondering. He disturbed the reality of that 1967 church by offering another. While Jesus disturbed the peace of his hometown, Nazareth, he showed up at Nazareth, read in the synagogue, and made like a star. The locals, as locals do, commented upon the size of his swelling head. Jesus, instead of politely holding his tongue like a good boy, reminded them of Elijah, who, although there were lots of Hebrew widows starving, fed the foreigner in Zarephath. And Elisha, who, though lots of Hebrews had leprosy, did the miracle thing with Naaman, the foreigner, the Syrian. Jesus' message was clear. If you guys don't like me, see if I care. I'll go to the foreigners. His hometown buddies quickly judged that he was a bad boy and deserved to be thrown off a cliff. Conflict often arises when competing realities clash. The ecological concerns of the creators of Happy Feet clash with the consumerist culture endorsed by the Bush government. The reality of a supernatural deity who miraculously intervenes in human affairs clashes with the realities of the Lloyd Gehrings, who understand God is grounded in the power of love. The Nazareth reality of religion, serving only its chosen adherents, clashes with the Jesus reality of spirituality that includes all, even the foreigners. Each reality is not equally valid. It's not a case of there being lots of different realities and we all have to somehow learn to live together. Some realities are more right than others. And some realities are plainly wrong. Some realities have no room in their worldview for difference, and when it crops up, want to punish the different ones. At the same time, we need to be skeptical of those who would wish us all to conform to universal truths. Such universal truths in the past have been used to colonize less powerful cultures and persecute any diversity. So-called universal truths are still used to promote brands of unaccountable capitalism and religious dogma. Jesus was forthright in his views. He didn't mince his words. He got up the noses of the religious gatekeepers, their sycophants, and many others. He made them mad. They wanted to kill him, and eventually did. Yet one of Jesus' abiding sayings, and one that keeps catching us all in our throats, is love your enemies. What does love mean in the context of enemies? Does it mean the penguins have to love the fishing trawlers plundering the southern oceans? Does it mean we have to love the brutality of empire as it continues to make a mess of the Middle East? Does it mean that religious fundamentalism has to be tolerated or religious xenophobia is okay? One of the evils of our world is generational hatred. There are many places where great injustice has been inflicted upon, say, a family. And the surviving family members grow up and teach their children to hate the perpetuators of that injustice. Eventually, some of them have a chance to inflict revenge. Among the recipients of that act of vengeance, there are those who likewise feel a great injustice has been inflicted upon them. They too grow up and teach their children to hate. This generation of cycle, this generational cycle of hate and vengeance then continues on and on. The best of the Christian tradition teaches us that the only way to cure hate, to love your enemies, is to make room in your heart for the other. It's called hospitality. By welcoming the enemy to sit, drink, and talk, you are acknowledging your common humanity. The tradition is also very clear that this is a costly exercise. It involves self-giving. It involves humbly recognizing that you might not have the whole truth and that the reality of your enemy might contain some truth too. It involves looking into your own heart and recognizing that all is not perfect and truthful there either. This is the meaning of the phrase in our liturgy, the oppressor who lies deep in our own soul. Jesus never compromised on his vision. He sought to expand people's understanding of the breadth of God's love and embrace. In particular, God's inclusion of the marginalized, sick, and impoverished. And he lived this vision by engaging in hospitable table fellowship, welcoming the vulnerable, and also engaging with the rich and powerful, sometimes with a positive outcome, but most often not, I suspect. He tried to treat his enemies with dignity. He cured the centurion's servant. Miracles weren't just for the powerless. He cared for the daughter of Jairus, leader of the synagogue. He dined with Matthew, a tax-collecting thug who supported the Roman regime. It's presumptuous to think that all these and other members of the military, religious, and revenue-collecting elites known to Jesus became his followers. I think it's more accurate to imagine Jesus' vision being accepted by a few, but rejected by most. The vision that we have is also only accepted by a few and rejected by most. If we follow in the spirit of Jesus, we will inevitably make enemies. People will revile you and persecute you, as Matthew's gospel reminds us. This is the experience of our forebears in the faith. Yet in order not to return hate with hate, we must always make room for the humanity of our enemies. After the Italian dictator Benito Mussolini and his mistress Clara Petacci were shot in 1945. Their bodies were hung upside down in a square in Milan. This public display was both an act of revenge for the many partisans who had been hanged in that square, and also an act of discouragement for those who still supported the Mussolini regime. The parish priest in that part of Milan, upon seeing their bodies, climbed up on a ladder and tied down Clara's dress to preserve some modesty. Think about that priest. He took a risk. In tying down her dress, he treated her as a human being. The partisans could have seen him as a sympathizer and had him shot. The partisans' reality was that of hatred and revenge, a reality that was quite understandable given what they had suffered. The priest's reality, though, was different. He understood the suffering, yet he still saw his enemies as human beings and wanted, as best he could, to treat them as such.